Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 56 for September 21st, 2009. Now with more Hater Aid. This episode is sponsored by Smile on My Mac at SmileOnMyMac.com. All right, well, we are here to talk about the iPhone. It's the iPhone Alley Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're talking about the iPhone, App Store, iTunes 9, iPod Touch, all that fun stuff tonight. As always, my good friend, Mr. Jeff Gamet, on loan from the Mac Observer and his parents' house. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing pretty good. And just so everyone can share in the excitement of hanging out at my parents' house, there are elk outside.
There are elk outside. And your bandwidth is kind of flaking out a little bit, I think.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
You need to grab your gun and we can have some, we can eat it.
Oh, I could actually, okay, here's the funny thing. There's a gun sitting in the corner. I didn't notice it
before. Well, you're up in the mountains in Colorado at the parents' house.
Yeah.
But we just better be quiet now because this is a topic we don't want to get into probably.
Yeah, and you're from California. I don't think you're allowed to talk about that. But nope. Adam Christensen is also here as always from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You have some iMac problems you told me about, so you're going to have to get out of here at some point.
Yeah,
soon.
I got an appointment with the Genius Bar in about 2 hours. So,
all right, so we will try and go through this fast. And Dominic Ballack from Powery Base is here joining us as our special guest to talk about a blog post that he wrote about, I believe we talked about this last week, regarding the changes to iTunes 9 and how that's affecting his sales. Thanks for being here, Dominic.
Yes, all right. Hi, everybody.
And we always enjoy having developers on because we get a nice, unique perspective on things. So we'll launch right into the happy, fun stuff first. AT&T is, and we may have spoken about this before, they're sporadically turning on MMS in various areas. I'm pretty sure we talked about this, but it's directly affecting me now, so I get to talk about it some more. So they've turned it on for a lot of customers in my area, in the Chicago Rockford area.
You have it?
I do have it.
Oh,
you bastard.
Wow.
I hate you.
Well, they didn't have you guys. Okay, so here's how it works. They're turning it on for people, but they're not letting them know, because the official rollout date is going to be the 25th, and that's when that special software update comes. The .ipcc, or the carrier update, will come through iTunes and magically turn on MMS. You'll get that little camera button in your messages application. So you need that first for it to work. And so you need both the carrier update and AT&T to turn it on for you. So What many people have been doing is just simply installing that, and I assume just kind of every once in a while trying to see if an MMS will send or not. And for me, it had been, you know, sitting there trying to send, and then finally, you know, stopping with an error. And at some point, one of my friends who had it on, I believe it may have been coincidence, but I had tried it a couple hours before that. And then he tried sending me an MMS, and it worked. I just had an image right there, and then I could send one back. And so I sent a bunch of pictures of my cats to everybody, and everybody sent pictures of their cats to me. And
that's so sweet.
I'm pretty sure that's how, you know, the typical, you know, how you test something like that. So I'm expecting a lot of cat pictures to go back and forth over MMS. So have you guys tried installing that IPCC file?
No, because the last time I tried something like that, I got all in trouble with Apple and the Genius people, and it was just all bad.
So okay, so
I'm playing by the rules now and just waiting. But so I think I feel like I'm not special because Apple hasn't picked me to get their, or AT&T hasn't picked me to get their early update. Well, it's like being, it's like, you know, grade school all over again, being picked last in dodgeball or something.
Well, you may have it on. Here's the thing. You have to, you have to find that file somewhere. Well, I mean, I found it via a rapid share link in, I think, a MacRumors forum discussion. I grabbed it. And here's the thing. And I think it's going to take us into the dev team hacking kind of thing. But they're now signing the carrier update files. So previously in 3.0 and up through, I think, beta 1 of 3.1, you could craft your own carrier update file and add the proper information to turn on tethering as well as the MMS option, even if your phone didn't support it, and then send that to your phone, and it would say, oh, okay, great, carrier update, and add all that necessary information, and ta-da, it all works. In beta 2, I didn't know this until the dev team posted their information, but they're now signing those files. So beta 2 and up, so as in, you know, anybody who's using 3.1 or more, you know, 3.0.1 did not require this, but the carrier updates now have to be signed by Apple, which means you can't go in there and tinker around and mess with them and then send it to your phone because your phone won't accept them. So only,
well, that's interesting.
Only the official, and that just irks me.
Yeah. Why?
Because, well, because
you can't hack your phone anymore.
Because I can't turn on tethering.
Yeah, because Apple doesn't want you to have it, and
no, AT&T doesn't want me to have it.
Well, whatever. But I mean, it's perfectly within their right. This is the whole cat and mouse game that everybody knows. When you're going to get into doing that stuff, you're going to have to play. So
I completely agree. Now, here's the thing here's why I'm really upset. Not so much with that, because I understand. It made sense when I saw that story initially that, you know, beta 2 blocks that. Fine, whatever. Here's the thing, though. With the iPhone 3GS as well as the iPod Touch second and third generations, they are now, with 3.1, uniquely signing the software update builds.
Yeah.
So only those uniquely signed builds will work. So Pwnage does not work anymore on the 3GS or those iPod Touches.
Mm-hmm.
Which not only means, yeah, you can't unlock, but you can't jailbreak either. At least not right now.
If you weren't a terrorist.
I'm not a terrorist. I just want a custom SMS tone.
That's Apple's excuse, though, right? Yeah, unlocking is terrorists unlock
I know.
Their phone and drug dealers.
Well, yeah, obviously. What else would you be doing with those custom SMS tones? But, you know, okay, so one of the big the guy who invented Cydia, the application that distributes the jailbroken software, you know, once you jailbreak your phone, you can get third-party apps that aren't available on the App Store, and let's disregard hacked, you know, stolen apps for now. But Cydia distributes all that fun stuff, and the guy who wrote that application had a very interesting blog post on it, essentially, you know, calling out Apple on the whole, you know, you used to be all about think different and all this stuff, and now you're blocking people from customizing their phones. Sure, they're customizing people from, you know, stealing apps and, you know, unlocking the phone, but they're also locking people out of just simply customizing. You know, I have a friend who, you know, he's going to stay on 3.0.1 because he likes his custom tones. He likes the ability to run some stuff in the background, and you get some really neat stuff. I haven't seen a jailbroken phone in a while, and he showed me some cool stuff, you know, that you can do with it. It's upsetting. Although I don't really know how they would kind of get around that to block the unlocking. Now,
well, you know, I mean, Dominic's a developer, right?
Yes.
I'm kind of curious what is, if you care to chime in, Dominic, I mean, what's your perspective on hacking and jailbreaking? And we talk about it on, you know, between the three of us on many episodes, but what's your thoughts? Is he there?
I don't know. Maybe he's still there. But yeah, I just, you know, I understand Apple doesn't want people stealing applications.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, there you are.
Yeah.
Ah, sorry. I had the mute button press. Okay, so about that jailbreaking. Well, I personally think that there are some features on modified devices that I can jump to my mail because this is an interesting topic, and I had an email from one customer, and what he was asking was that if our application Notify Me can show upcoming tasks and reminders on the home screen or the lock screen. So that's particularly for me. I think that will be great if Apple allowed such behavior or such modifications or the applications to show some important stuff on the lock screen, on the home screen. Mm-hmm. But that's currently not possible, of course. So right. We as the developers, we have no ability to show anything on the home screen or the lock screen, of course. And jailbreak is the only way to do that. And for tasks, applications, and managing time and various calendars, that will be a killer feature for them. Many people would buy a lot of applications which show important stuff on the home screen or on the lock screen, you know, but that's currently not possible. And I believe it's not possible for a reason. There will be many apps appearing which will kind of break the uniqueness of the iPhone, you know. Everywhere you see iPhones on pictures, on anywhere, basically anywhere, advertising, you know, this familiar iPhone home screen and iPhone lock screen. If mm-hmm. Some applications will change that, that could break the you know what I mean?
Yeah, the way that the iPhone, yeah.
The user interface, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So Apple is probably not allowing us to modify the screen to prevent breaking the design or the main face which shows up when you just show the iPhone to your friend or basically they want it to be the same for everyone. So you just unlock your iPhone and you see the icons and the familiar home screen. If any application will change that, it will not be the iPhone look. It will look different, just different.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to Apple's credit, yeah, that's you know, it's fantastic that you know the iPhone is so easy to use for most people. You know, they just want the easy experience, what Apple gives them, and that's great. And you can kind of take this to the Mac as well. You know, most people aren't going to start customizing things, and you know, I'm on, you know, I have a custom dock because, you know, with Leopard mm-hmm. you can do that, and I made it look a little different, so I like that. But, you know, Apple didn't prevent me from doing that. And I think, you know, one of the arguments is, you know, most people are going to be fine with, you know, buying a regular, just a Ford Taurus or whatever, a Ford Focus, something. And, you know, just driving that around and doing the normal stuff, putting gas in it, whatever. But some people want to tinker. They want to customize and they don't weld the hood shut. You know, Ford, you know, is going to say, well, we don't recommend you using non-Ford parts and there could be problems and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that makes sense in their company, and they don't want to, you know, risk their image and that sort of thing. But, they don't, like I said, they don't weld the hood shut.
Yeah, that's true, but they don't let you go in and tinker with the computer that's on board the car.
Okay, but why?
Well, but don't they, can't you get like alternate chips?
I think you can.
Things like that?
I think you can actually get a plug, you know, go online. I looked at this for my Volkswagen. You can get a plug for your computer and software, and you can do whatever interesting things. And you can remove, you know, limiters for, you know, your speed and all that.
Yeah, that's jailbreaking your car.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not complaining. I'm not saying you shouldn't be able to do that. I'm just bringing that in as part of the comparison. So that
they make it difficult enough that normal users aren't going to, you know, it's not easy enough for them to do it. So they're not going to be tempted to do it because they could get themselves into trouble. But more advanced people who have the know-how and the ability to do that, you know, the correct tools, they should be able to do that. No, I understand right. unlocking. Now, isn't, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't part of the DMCA with unlocking phones, you shouldn't you, aren't you allowed to do that, or am I wrong?
I don't know enough about that. I do want to comment on, okay. on your analogy, though, your car analogy, because I think it's a good one. There's a couple things, though, with the car thing. When Ford comes out with their new model the next year, you don't necessarily expect, or Ford doesn't have to assume, that they're going to provide you the same connector for that computer chip that was in your old one, or that they're not going to alter things in a way to make your upgrades from your prior model not work anymore. And that's essentially what Apple's doing here, right? They're doing it a little more deliberately. I mean, that's simplifying things in sure. terms of the analogy. But you know what? They could decide, you know what? This chip is going to have two pins in it, and the old one had three. And guess what? Your old chip doesn't work with the new car.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what Apple's doing here. It's like, we're making it harder for you to modify and customize this thing. Fine.
No, I completely agree with that. Until, you know, with everything that Apple has been doing, it's been fine with me, because, you know, there have been ways to get in there, and they're, you know, fairly simple for people. You know, once it was figured out how the iPhone generally works by the dev team, you know, they could pretty well figure it out. But now with the signing, that takes it to a whole new level. It takes it from, okay, we're doing our thing as we normally do, you know, where we might make a change that, you know, might break your, you know, your current hack or whatever. They're taking that one step further to, you know, we're not going to allow you to do anything.
Okay. And here's the other comment I want to make. And believe me, I am all for, we've talked about
this on the show.
I have nothing against jailbreaking. If you want to jailbreak your phone, if you want to go through all that stuff, that's fine. And I think you should be able to. I think you're going to have this cat and mouse game. Apple's come out very publicly and said, we're not going to support it. We're going to try and, I don't know if that they directly said, we're going to try and stop it, but I think it's assumed when they say, we don't like this. We're not supporting it. It's our device. You shouldn't be doing this. You know, I think that's their prerogative. But
I just don't like.
I will tell you what I'd love Apple to be more transparent about is I've gone into the Genius Bar. And I've done it myself. You know, I did some hacking and I went into the Genius Bar and was like, my phone's not working. And they're like, well, they found something. It's hacked. You tried to hack it. It's like, oh yeah, I did. So you know, I'm really wishing Apple would be transparent with how many people go into the Genius Bar with an issue and take up time and take up an appointment and take up Apple's resources because they've hacked something on their phone and they don't realize that you know, something's running in the background because they put a hack on, or there's some non-standard thing that's happening on that device that they're now blaming Apple for. And I know that's not the person who knows about jailbreaking, but you have the situation where somebody will be like, oh, you should jailbreak your app. Oh, I don't know how to do that. Well, let me do it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's time and money and effort that Apple has to deal with. And it's a problem for them. So, you know, I'm curious how much, and they're just not transparent enough about it, how much of that's happening. And I've talked to people at the Genius Bars, and they do claim that's a large, you know, from what I understand, that's a large percentage of the stuff they're dealing with is people have hacked their phones in weird ways.
Yeah.
And that becomes the problem. And that's using resources that, you know, hey, I can't get a Genius Bar appointment for 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know some people at a local Apple store, and I should get a hold of them and ask about that. But I think for the most part, and I'm just a little TO'd, obviously, so I'm going to be speaking more, you know, from the perspective of I just want jailbreak regardless. But,
right.
you know, for the most part, when someone comes in with a hack, you know, I think if Apple was a little more upfront about the fact that this happens, and if someone comes in and says, I have a problem, I think the first question a genius should be trained to ask with iPhone issues that seem to be related to software is, have you modified your phone in any way? And if so, then, you know, we're not going to slap you on the wrist about that, but please restore your phone before coming back, because we can't diagnose that kind of problem.
Okay, can I say about
sure.
this something? Okay, so this is the common question or a common situation when a customer emails us with a support email, and obviously if I replied that come back when you restore your firmware, I would not satisfy that customer. Understand? You understand? So that's not a good answer, basically, because. How can I explain that? It's true that jailbreaks cause some problems, and we receive a lot of mails when the application is not working as it's supposed to be working, and we usually spend hours replying to the customer what he or she should try before going to the next step, or basically we are trying to find a solution. But on a jailbroken device, you can't really help these people, because the device is behaving very strange. There are some strange situations where just the application does strange things completely. I can't describe.
Yeah.
Like,
I think that push notifications at some point were very highly affected by that. Yeah.
But push notifications, exactly. Some jailbreaks also contain an unlock, and people don't know about that jailbreak contains an unlock, activation basically.
Yeah.
So they leave it checked and they proceed to the jailbreak, and their device is automatically unlocked too. And they don't know about it. And some unlocks or some modifications in general can cause notifications to not work.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We receive a lot of emails, and people are complaining, and we just can't answer that. Come back when your firmware is restored. That will be a 1-star rating for us on the App Store. You understand?
Yeah, and I think a lot of, you know, some of that is definitely from people who just don't understand what they're doing, what they're getting into with the jailbreak. And I think that that's definitely a problem on that end of the spectrum too. For people, I think, like Adam said, you know, people who have a friend who say, oh, you know, let me jailbreak that for you, and you can check that out. For the most part, right. I feel like people who do the jailbreak themselves, if something seems a little funky, they, for the most part, you know, at least with the people that I know who jailbreak their phones, they're going to be a little hesitant to go, you know, immediately to the developer or to Apple if they have jailbroken their phone. If I jailbreak my mom's phone, she's not even going to be aware of it the next day. You know,
right.
For people who aren't aware of it, who don't consciously do it, then that becomes a problem. And it does take up a lot of resources for Apple, but that hasn't really, I mean, you can do the same kind of modifications with your Mac.
Right. Well, yeah, I don't know if it's quite the same, but I mean, Dominic brought up a good point I hadn't even thought about. I mean, it causes a problem for developers, where maybe there's a background app that's conflicting with your app, and suddenly the customer thinks your app's broken,
yep.
And you now don't have a Delta to support that. You know, you don't have a static thing to support that customer against. You've got to spend several emails figuring out, oh, you jailbroke your phone, because they're probably not going to lead with that information. I have a jailbroken phone.
Right.
Your app's not running right.
I feel like a lot of customers who do, you know, are the ones who jailbroke their own phone, you know, who are savvy enough to figure out, okay, I want a jailbreak, instead of people who, you know, had it jailbroken by somebody else, are maybe more inclined to, especially if it's going to a developer, not so much with Apple maybe, but if they're going to a developer and saying, I have a problem, well, I have it jailbroken. I don't think that's the problem. That could be the problem, but here it is. But, you know, a lot of times, again, there are people who are just simply not savvy enough. And I don't want to say anything bad against Mr. Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick, but he, you know, he's in my Mac user group, and at some point he came in and, you know, check out my iPhone. It's jailbroken. And I think one of the guys in the user group, you know, jailbroke it for him. And he's like, you know, checking all these apps and that kind of thing. But he's, you know, because he didn't do it, and he's not maybe aware of the fact that some things could affect things like that, he may not be aware that the jailbreak could be, you know, the direct cause of that.
Well, you'd be surprised, because on our support page, we have a frequently asked questions link, and we encourage every person to read the frequently asked questions before filling a support form. And you'd be surprised, but they don't do it usually.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So, and the one of the first points is to check if your device is jailbroken or somehow modified, and If it is, then that's probably the cause of your problem.
Yeah.
But in any case, we still receive a lot of emails and we reply frequently. And as you said about the Genius Bar, the first question should be, is your device modified in any way? And that's our first question in our emails. But some people don't even know that their iPhone is modified because some friend modified it for them. And
you know, the funny thing about the internet, before I started, you know, iPhone Alley and all that, I didn't realize how insane everybody on the internet is. Everybody is crazy. They may not be crazy in real life, but they are crazy and they will not read, you know, do this first before you contact us. Now, I just want to bring up this one point before, Adam, you jump in. But, you know, I know the guys at the Omni Group pretty well. I said Omni Group. Omni Group. But they have these kind of questions come to them too, I'm sure. Every software company has, you know, a bunch of people saying, I have a problem with your software, you know, help me out. And at some point for some of the questions, it comes down to, oh, I changed this one thing. You know, I modified this part of, you know, maybe, you know, someone who plays around with, you know, modifying their Mac, they may have touched a framework weird or, you know, changed something in the application. I think this happens, you know, quite a bit with, you know, with the Mac as well. And it's something that, you know, Dominic, don't get me wrong. I completely sympathize with you, on those issues, but I think it's something that happens a lot and I'm not sure. I guess my point is I'm not happy with the walled garden that is the iPhone right now. And, you know, I've been on other podcasts where I've said, you know, I haven't been as upset, you know, it's just saying, you know, kind of going with it, but at the point now that I have a 3GS and I can't jailbreak, I don't have that option, at least not right now. I feel like the dev team will eventually figure out how to get around it because, of course, people have figured out how to get around the FairPlay DRM with the applications. And, you know, 2 days after the TomTom app was out, it was completely hacked and available for free. I feel like it's going to be figured out, but it hurts me. And that's all. Yes. I'm going to say.
I think jailbreak is completely fine. As I said, there are many features which are only available on jailbroken devices. And we would be happy to actually include features which only jailbreak supports, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But that's not a way.
Yeah, there are some developers who, you know, like Quick, we talk about Quick a lot. There are some developers who, you know, put their software out to the jailbreak community. I believe, I may be wrong about this, but at some point, Sam Steele, who does the official Last.fm application, you know, he at some point, I mean, he started the application for jailbreak phones, the Last.fm application that lets you scrabble what you play on your phone, which is fantastic. I would love... You know, most of the music that I play on my phone throughout the day is on my phone, you know, in the car and whatever. And I'd love to have that music scrabbled. But that's obviously a background application. And so it's interesting to see some developers still actively developing for jailbreak. Now, Adam, I think you wanted to get in there with something, but I think we should move on it.
We can move on.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think there's anything more to add. Okay. Add to this. I do. So I don't get emails. I do want everybody to know. I have nothing against people who want to jailbreak their phone. I just don't think that Apple needs to necessarily make it easy for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I just think. Yeah. Okay. We've heard it.
If I can complete this and finish this, I think I will talk for all developers that we have nothing against jailbreaking in general, but it sometimes causes more problems than expected, and in the end we receive a lot of emails which are the problems caused by modifications, so we are obviously not happy about that, but we have to deal with it.
And Absolutely. To be totally flippant and dismissive of you, Michael,
okay.
Google and Palm are ready and willing to take your business.
Yes, they are. So, okay, let's move on. Let's break this up with some happy news here. The iPod Touch has been, Macworld has taken the iPod Touch 2G and the latest iPod Touch. I believe only the 16 and 32 are the ones that they looked at for this comparison. But they did a speed comparison to, see what's going on with the iPod Touch. And so they took both of them. And so the boot time on the first one, the 2G, 31 seconds, the new Touch, 19 seconds. Launching applications, Peggle 12 seconds versus 7 seconds. HR Battle 20 seconds versus 15 seconds. Rolando 2, 10 seconds versus 10 seconds versus 5 seconds. And loading up web pages 34 seconds versus 15 seconds. So after seeing those results, I went to, Jeff, how do you put it with Wikipedia? The Oracle of All Knowledge?
Yeah, it's the Oracle.
It's the Oracle, yes. I went to Wikipedia and I thought, they generally have, those benchmarks somewhere on the page. So I checked out the iPod Touch, and it does look like they have updated not only the graphics processor in there, but they've also updated the main CPU and bumped the RAM. They've doubled the RAM, according to unnamed sources on Wikipedia. So Wikipedia, it says the third generation has double the RAM. The CPU has the new ARM Cortex-A8 processor, 833 megahertz underclocked to 600 megahertz, as opposed to the ARM 7, which was at 533 in the previous generation. So it looks like the iPod Touch, the newer, it's the 16 and the 32, right, that have the bumps?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they have updated not only the graphics, but also the RAM and the CPU. But what I actually checked one of these out. A friend got one. And as far as I can tell, and it's really not scientific at all, but it seems like it does not have the oleophobic screen, which is interesting. Jeff, do you know, or Adam, have you checked those out?
You know, mm-mm. I didn't even notice when I was playing with the iPod Touch at the Apple Store. I'm going to suspect it does not have the oleophobic screen.
Well, you're not going to be holding it up to your face, I guess, is the thing.
You don't know me.
Do the new iPod Touches have a microphone in them now, or is it just the speaker?
Just the speaker.
Okay.
All right. By the way, Michael, I don't know if this is definitive, conclusive proof, but I remembered, iFixit had done a teardown.
Yeah.
Of the iPod Touch, and they do the processor, the ARM processor, is labeled with a new number.
Okay.
So that doesn't inherently mean that it's a faster, newer, better processor. Who knows what that means in terms of the internal numbering, but it is a different numbered processor in terms of the marking on the chip from the prior generation.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just pulling this information from Wikipedia, and it's still, I looked for the citation, and right now it's set as citation needed. So I couldn't find the source, but I'm guessing usually with Wikipedia, people, find the information and then put it there, but that's not always the case.
Actually, typically what I do is make stuff up and then go back and find a source for it later.
Have you worked on my Wikipedia page lately?
I should.
You should. I don't have a Wikipedia page. I'm just making that up. But you should make a Wikipedia page with a bunch of made up stuff.
I could totally do that.
Do you have a Wikipedia page, Jeff?
I have no idea. I have not checked myself on Wikipedia to see if someone has made one.
I should do that. All right, so let's move on.
don't worry. I had one and they took it down.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
Well, yeah. That's just not right. Don't they realize who you are?
Yeah, come on. It's Adam Christensen. All right, so let's move on. Google says that Apple did really reject the Google Voice app. Now, they say that their head of, I'm going to get this wrong, one of their guys, I'm looking here, Google Senior Vice President of Engineering and Research talked to Phil Schiller, and Phil Schiller said that it was completely rejected, and then Apple came back and said, it wasn't rejected, we're still looking at it. But really, are they still looking at it in any way that would say, we might let them back? I mean, honestly, they got rid of the other Google Voice app. I don't know if we want to open this can of worms again.
All right, so here's my perspective without digging too deep into the can of worms. Apple has a lot of incentive not to lie about this, as does Google. So my guess is that through the conversations that people at Apple were having with people at Google, the Google people got the impression Apple was going to reject their app, which then eventually evolved in their minds into Apple has rejected our app.
Yeah.
And on Apple's end, they might be in the, well, you know, we're not going to approve their app, but we haven't rejected it. So my guess is both sides are absolutely certain that they're telling the truth, and they really mean what they're saying.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's move on to the reason we have Dominic on the podcast. So last week, I believe we talked about, you know, in our ongoing conversation about how much we hate iTunes 9, with the changes to the App Store and the iTunes Store, Dominic had a post very shortly after the change that essentially stated that, and Dominic, you can fill in on details, but the new navigation in the App Store has caused a 20-30% drop in sales to his lovely productivity app, Notify Me. And actually, I believe my pick last week was Notify Me. I love Notify Me. I use that a lot. And so, Dominic, you want to walk us through this?
Yes, sure. So I'm on the App Store. So what I can see here is that if you open up Music Store, I think there are many great changes for music. That's great. All I have to say about iTunes 9, it's phenomenal. It's just perfect. I sound like a Steve Jobs on stage right now, but I think it's really great. If you want to buy music, there is not a better way than iTunes 9. But what Apple did, Apple have done a year ago, they basically took iTunes Music Store and replaced the album arts with application icons. Yep. So obviously that's not the correct way of selling software for mobile devices. So I still think that applications should have some kind of other interface, or maybe it still needs some work on the pages on the page of the application where people comment, and the developers should have the ability to reply back to customers, contact them to their email, and so on. So while Apple brought a lot of nice features to iTunes 9, I still think that App Store should be taken some kind of other way, and it should not be the same as the Music Store, which is basically, if you open up the index page, they are both the same.
Yeah.
There are only a difference in the icons or the album art. So if I can reply to that question about sales drop, if I open up the statistics now, I can see that people actually got used eventually to that navigation bar. So sales some kind of jumped back to the normal conditions as before iTunes 9 become available. So this navigation bar brought some questions, or maybe just people weren't familiar with it on the first day, on the first 3-4 days, but eventually they figure it out, and we are seeing that the numbers are now in the original level.
Oh, so the numbers of sales have returned to their previous.
Yes, that's what I wanted to say.
Gotcha. Okay, so I want to say that I completely agree with you on the fact that the App Store is just very tacked on still, even with iTunes 9, to the Music Store. And I think we've had, I think we all agree on that. Have we had this discussion? I feel like we have.
And we've talked about it, and I think I tend to agree that it is to a certain degree broken. But yeah, we certainly did talk about the fact that it was, you know, something that was kind of shoehorned on top of the music, and it still suffers from that thing where, you know, music is all about the top, you know, yep, whatever X list, right? Top 10, top 50, top 100, whatever. And podcasting is the same way. And I mentioned that too. I mean, we suffer a lot from a lot of the same things in the podcasting section that I think App Store, you know, people suffer from as well. It's very hard to find stuff. I think Apple, what surprises me with the recent changes is Apple added the Genius thing. And I'm not sold that the Genius is great on the iPhone app, but at least that was something that was an attempt to kind of show, you know, some recommendations that are a little smarter than just, you know, the ones that you might find on the App Store. It picks weird things. So
here's what I want to say about
that. That's a fix, but it is an attempt to expose apps that you might not, you know, otherwise be exposed to. I think both podcasts and apps need more of a social media or some sort of way of sharing those things more easily person to person, because I think word of mouth is the most powerful way I find out about apps and podcasts.
Well, yeah, here's
even more so than music.
Here's the thing about, you know, if you think about how you find an app for your Mac or even for your PC, how do you do that? Is there one spot that you go to?
No, well, it's the same way. This is the problem. The app developers would probably, you know, people making Mac apps would probably love to have anything like the App Store, even in its current broken form. I mean, so the way you find out about I found out about most applications is either friends through, you know, Macworld or you know, online places doing reviews. And I think, you know, app developers are having to do the same thing. They have this additional thing that's the App Store. The problem with apps, though, is if you're like me, and I think most people are, a lot of times you're buying apps or finding new apps right on your phone. It's almost an impulse buy. You're like, oh, I want to play some sort of Scrabble game or Tetris, or I'll pop on, you know, so you pop on there, you do a search, and hopefully something comes up that you can find. But
and I feel like they, you know, the Apple kind of catered to the whole immediate instant gratification kind of feel of, you know, what a cell phone kind of brings, you know. Now, on your computer, you don't think, all right, I'm going to hop on here and I'm going to get five new things that are going to immediately, you know,
right,
make this more interesting. On, you know, but that's the way it's set up on your phone. And it's just, it's a very, you know, you don't give a lot of thought to what you're getting.
But, you know, why can't I have a list that, you know, I have a group of friends. This is what the kind of thing I'd love to see. I would love to see someone in iTunes to have a group of friends set up that I know like, you know, similar games or similar applications that I like, that I could toss, you know, say, okay, I'm going to open this up. If Michael finds a cool app, let him add this app to my little, you know, apps I should check out list or something like that. And you could be like, oh, I just found this really cool app. I'm going to throw it into, you know, pass it out to all my buddies. Here's this app. I would love a feature like that, because that's how I find out about most of my apps, is my friends. And so unless I'm, you know, talking to you for this podcast or something like that, or you really feel like, you know, sometimes I'll catch stuff on Twitter, but it'd be even more great for me if that experience all happened right in iTunes.
Yeah,
so I log into iTunes or I log on to my, you know, the app on the phone, and it goes, hey, you know, there's 23 new apps your friends think you should check out.
You know, adding the
so when they were talking social media, that was the kind of stuff I was hoping was going to be in iTunes.
But instead,
9,
they added
instead they added a
link that says share on Twitter.
Yeah, instead of they added a marketing feature for Apple, which is you know, which nobody's going to use, because it's just like you're pimping for the iTunes store.
Exactly. Now speaking to the Genius feature, that sounded fantastic until you get to use it. Now, first of all, it's not in the app. You can't go to it in iTunes, right? It only works on your phone.
That's the other thing, is why is that not? Why is that only on the phone?
Here's the great thing. So I spent $10 on Beehive IM, and I have that on my phone, and I use it a lot. So if I go to the Genius feature, the first recommended app, here's what it is. Based on Beehive IM 3.0, you might also like Yahoo Messenger. Because even though I already haven't, it's essentially recommending alternatives to the apps that I already have.
Right.
That's the problem that I have with the Genius feature.
Now,
to its credit, I already have.
Yeah. And to its credit, it also says, you know, three lines down, based on Mobile Navigator, you know, a GPS app, you may also like the iBart app. Now that makes more sense because it's not another turn-by-turn app. Also, you know, based on OmniFocus, you might also like this Outliner application, which is cool. So it seems to be getting better. So I'm not going to completely discredit right now. But, you know, based on Shazam, you might like, you know, Drumkit. Or based on iBlast Mokey, you might like iSpider. Getting some cell phone noise from somebody. But, you know.
Yeah, that's mine. Sorry.
That's fine. So it's just, I really feel like Apple needs to rethink. If they just added the social aspect, I mean, this is what Web 2.0 is all about. Forgive me if I start to sound like Leo Laporte, but it's, you know, that helps so much. You know, a recommendation from a friend speaks so much more than, you know, seeing it in the top 100 list. So that's...
Yeah, so why can't I, you know, have an app on my phone and go, you know what, I wanna send this out to these people on my iTunes buddy list, you know. It's like if that kind of thing was built or into even, iTunes. But I think even more so, I think, you know, Dominic's right. I mean, it's almost like they need to rethink the App Store and kind of build it from the ground up as its own thing.
No, yeah, I feel like even people who review the app, like let's say someone gives it a 4-star, some app a 4-star and says, you know, okay, now see, I'm talking about this and I actually checked it out. People who, if you may not know this, I just figured this out as we're talking, but if you look at someone's review and you see that they reviewed it and say, hey, you know, I like this application, if you click on their name, it's going to show you all the review ratings and all the reviews on not only apps, but in also, you know, music and all that. But I assume that's been there forever and I've only just now checked it out. Have you guys known about that?
No, I haven't.
That's news to me. I'm picturing someone now sitting down and using that to go through and see if they can find the people that are paid to post reviews.
Yeah, well, so it's just there needs to be a lot more social interaction, I feel like, because that really helps out more than, you know, Google has an algorithm that helps you find, you know, sites very efficiently. But, you know, I mean, without that, the social aspect, aside from an algorithm kind of thing, which I don't really feel like they're doing much with except for the Genius. But, you know, I feel like they need more social stuff going on.
Yeah. And something else we talked about and we, you know, no one knows if this is technically possible. We kind of assume there's a certain amount of data that gets sent back to Apple on apps and stuff like that. But somebody had made the recommendation too, if they could just track like how many times or how much an app has been used by a person before they review it and then factor that into the review ratings or the star thing and kind of have more of a weighted scale. So, you know, somebody who's popped open the app one time and then gives it a 1-star rating, you know, and used it for less than a minute and given it a 1-star rating, that shouldn't count as much as somebody who, you know, reviews the app and has used it, you know, 20, 30 hours, something like that. Because I'm noticing the strange phenomenon. You guys notice that from a ratings perspective, your app really suffers if you're a free app because anybody can download it and anybody can review it and they can give it a 1-star for any reason.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I tend to notice that paid apps have on average, and this is just, you know, my perception. I haven't done any hard study, but that paid apps generally have higher ratings than free apps.
I definitely think so.
On average.
I've seen that too.
I've had great free apps and that have 2-star ratings, and I'm like, these are great apps. And I talk to other people who have the app, and they're like, yeah, this is an awesome app, and it has a 2-star rating. I'm going, well, why does this have a 2 or 2.5-star rating when everybody I know who uses it loves the app?
Yeah. Okay, we got to get moving before everybody has to jump out. So I'll say before we get to our iPhone picks, our wonderful sponsor of this week is, of course, Smile on My Mac, smileonmymac.com. And we're talking about Text Expander Touch for the iPhone for those using the Mac application or maybe those who don't. We haven't checked out the Mac application. Text Expander allows you to set up shortcuts for frequently typed things, such as I use it for my address. I type, a shortcut -addr, and boom, there's my entire address. I can send that to somebody in an email or something like that. Or setting up the podcast. You know, if I have a bunch of HTML and all that stuff, I just type -podcast, and there's all that. I mean, if you look at the show notes, there's a lot of stuff there, and most of that is taken care of by Text Expander. And for guests that are frequently on the show, you know, I have a shortcut for inserting Ken Ray's name, for example, into the show notes so I can have his, the link to his podcast and his Twitter name. So now you can get that, all that wonderful stuff synced to your iPhone. Pop open that application. It gives you a nice little space to work on. You can't actually use the application of the background due to the limitations of the iPhone, but you get a nice little workspace where you can type out your email messages or your Twitter messages or whatever you want to do, and then either send that to an application that supports it, you know, with all the text expander shortcuts happening for you right within the application. You can either send it to an application that supports it, or you can send it, you know, it has a lot of support for Twitter apps and all that, but you can also just copy it. You know, it has a button for copy all to my clipboard right away. You can paste it wherever you want to, and it saves a ton of time. And like I said before, you can sync it to, if you already have Text Expander on your Mac, you can sync it to that. And also, very exciting for me, I think, is they have an SDK available for developers. So if 8Bits, for example, wants to throw some Text Expander support into Tweety, then he can add that and get the same snippets from Text Expander right within Tweety. It'll have the Text Expander engine right built into it. Awesome, awesome idea. It costs $4.99. It's in the App Store. It's a great application. And also, Text Expander for your Mac, if you're interested in that, I use it constantly. $29.95. There's a free trial available. All at smileonmymac.com. And of course, they're in the App Store. Search for Text Expander. And we thank them so much for their support. We love Text Expander. And I actually got my Smile on My Mac mug.
Oh, nice.
And I'm very happy about that. So, thanks to them.
You have a different mug than I do.
Yeah. They send out different ones. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So support us by supporting our sponsors. And Text Expander is an awesome app. Once you get hooked on it, you're never going to want to use a computer or an iPhone that doesn't have it there. Once you get all those snippets in there. So smileonmymac.com. And with that, let's move on to our iPhone picks. Adam, do you have a pick for us this week?
Yeah, I was scrambling because I almost didn't, but I'm going to go ahead and recommend this one. I haven't used it a ton, but it did just get better, and I used it a couple times since a recent update. Have you guys tried out, it's called Red Laser?
No, what is that?
No.
It's a barcode scanning app.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, will go out and search Amazon and other places to find, you know, competitive prices.
Does this only work with the 3GS now? Or
it works best with the 3GS.
But yeah, it will work on the other.
Yeah, and they just updated the scanning. It happens much faster and much quicker than before. On the other ones, you can use pictures taken from your library, but the live scanning feature, I think, has been updated. So it kind of gives you a little area, much like if you've ever used Delicious Library, you know, it kind of has the barcode scanning area to scan into. Yeah.
That's very cool.
It's just kind of neat and fun. I haven't really used it a ton, but I've been waiting for, you know, and kind of poking around trying to find a good barcode scanning app, and this is the one that's kind of survived on my phone. I know there's a lot out there. I think Snapper was another one that people use, snapper.net, but I like the Red Laser.
That looks awesome. Red Laser, one word, $1.99 in the App Store. Awesome, awesome pick.
Yep.
And Jeff, what do you have for us?
All right, so I have an app that's for the design community, I guess anyone that gets all excited about color, and it's called My Pantone. And it's an application that gives you like all of the Pantone swatch books on your iPhone, which is in and of itself, that's very cool because that's hundreds of dollars worth of color chip books. And you have your RGB and HTML and LAB values. So you can pick colors and then put the values into whatever app you're using for making websites or whatever. The thing, though, that I think is stunningly cool is that you can use it to take photographs, and then it will find the dominant colors in the image and then give you the closest matching Pantone colors.
Cool. See, I don't know anything about Pantones because I claim to dabble into some design. But Pantone is a explain what Pantone is for people who are so, uninitiated. I know what it is. Let's pretend that I know what it is, but explain it for everybody else.
Okay. So Pantone is a company that specializes in color-related products for the design world.
For print, right?
For print, and they also do color matching for textiles. So you can get Pantone color matching for fabrics and plastics and things like that too.
So this is actually done by the Pantone company.
Yeah, this is done by the Pantone people.
So they got it right. So it's $9.99. It's in the App Store. All right. So Dominic has to leave. Let's just give him an outro. He's not going to have a pick this week, but you can go to Dominic. Are you still there?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Powery Base is his company. Notify Me is the app. It's wonderful. It was my pick last week. Well, how much is Notify Me? $1.99?
$3.99.
$2.99 in the App Store. Poweriebase.com, PoweryBase.com. And do you have a Twitter?
Twitter, PoweryBase.
Twitter.com/PoweryBase. Thank you so much for being on, Dominic. It was great having you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So let's move on to my pick. And have I talked about Navigon's mobile navigator GPS application yet?
No, I don't remember, but if you want to, I'm totally curious about it now because I'm seeing it's getting good ratings, and I thought I was going to get the TomTom one at some point, and I've waffled since then.
I'm
going
to say that, you know, the TomTom guys were, you know, they were really responsive about saying, oh yeah, we're definitely going to get you a promo code. We'll get you hooked up with it. No problem. You're on the list. You're going to get the, you know, the accessory as soon as it's available. You know, that hasn't been put out yet. So I can't complain about that yet, but I think they ran out of promo codes before they got to me on the list. So I've been waiting for a while. So hopefully when their next update comes out, I'll be able to check out the TomTom app and compare it to Navigon, because Navigon's pretty good. At first, it wasn't that great, but let me talk about it. It's called Mobile Navigator, and it's by a company called Navigon. It's $89.99 for the North American map, and that's, you know, the entire North America. They don't have, you know, any smaller sections than that. But it does the turn-by-turn directions very well. They have text-to-speech included in that, so it'll actually speak the street names. That's the most recent addition in the application. It does portrait landscape, of course. It tells you how fast you're going, ETA of getting to your destination. And you can add interim destinations in there. You can say, you know, find me a gas station on the way, you know, to wherever I'm going. It has shortcuts, you know, take me home, favorites, just, you know, all the same stuff that you would really expect on a regular old GPS. Now, some stuff it doesn't have, such as, you know, corrections in the map. You can't make any map corrections as you could, you know, like on a TomTom if you're used to a TomTom. But it does have integration with your contacts. The POI, the point of interest database, can be a little outdated at times. But for the most part, especially if you're going somewhere that you already know, and it does have, you know, I go to Chipotle a lot, or, you know, even though I know where it is, I can find it pretty easily. You know,
there's an app for that.
There is an app for that. I just checked it out, by the way, the new updated version that's free. But for the most part, it's my favorite navigation app on the iPhone. I haven't put up my review. I'll be putting that up sometime this week. You can hold me to that. But I'll list out the good and the bad with the Navigon app. So right now, that's the one I use, though, until I have a chance to check out the TomTom app. From what I've heard, it's not doing too well either. But the cool thing that they just let me know about is they're going to be adding some live traffic soon. So that will be great. That's when it gets really interesting with these great wired devices that can report back all the time. You know, the kind of thing that you got with the Dash. I know you, Adam, at least you were, we talked about the Dash. We talked about the Dash when we got picked up by Barry in Vegas. He has a Dash, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cool. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they're going to charge an extra $20, an in-app purchase kind of thing, for the live traffic, because that does cost them some money to provide that service. But for the most part, Navigon's mobile navigator, $89.99. it's a pretty safe bet that that's one of the best mobile GPS apps for the iPhone out there right now. And you can get that right now. Hey, what? There was something else I was going to mention, but I can't remember. Oh, before we move on to getting out of here, I want to say that Merlin Mann's going to be on our next show. Not going to be at the normal time, but you guys don't really know that anyway, because it's a podcast. Time shifting. On the 24th, we're going to have Merlin Mann on to talk about all things productivity, hopefully, maybe some rat holes. But the focus is going to be on productivity, not necessarily on GTD, but just all the cool things that you can take advantage of with your iPhone. So if you're tired of all these games, I get a lot of email from people saying, oh, thanks for recommending something that isn't a game on the podcast. You know, people want to get something done with their iPhone sometime too. So we're going to have Merlin on, the productivity guru. I think, Jeff, are you going to join us for that? Jeff and Adam?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be able to be there.
Cool. We'll see if we can get you on there as well, Adam. So be on the lookout for that show that's coming up with the next episode. And with that, I will say that iPhoneLA.com is a place to get more news, tips, and reviews every single day. Sometimes not so much on the weekend, but most of the days we are there bringing that info. And you can share a tip, an iPhone tip, something cool you find, or a product you want reviewed. Hit the Contact Us link on the side of the page. You can get our iPhone picks, you know, the list of every pick that we make. I try as hard as I can to keep that list updated. If you're in the car, you don't have to worry about writing that down. All the links are in there with the prices and all that. iPhoneAlien.com/podcast, as well as the show notes are there. Feedback can be emailed to podcast@iPhoneAlien.com. And once again, Jeff Gamet is on loan from the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, iPod Observer, fantastic websites. Check them out. Twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Hey, sure thing. And sorry, the elk moved on before I could get a picture for you.
That's okay. Say hi to your mom for us.
I will.
Great. And Adam Christensen is here from the MacCast, MacCast.com, and of course, Twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks for being here, Adam. I'll let you get off to your...
My genius bar appointment. Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Dominic was great show again.
Dominic was,
they'll take care of me. Like I was telling Michael earlier, you know, it's just one of those things. I have the AppleCare. It's a failed hard drive. You know, they'll take care of it. It's just kind of a hassle these days getting.
And you have a backup, right? You
know? Oh, of course.
Of course.
I got double backups.
Of course. Of course. Dominic, yeah. Once again, Dominic Balak was at poweribase.com, poweribase.com for a wonderful application. Notify me, and his Twitter is twitter.com/poweribase. My Twitter, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, and iPhone Alley's Twitter is twitter.com/iPhone Alley. And with that, another episode of the iPhone Alley podcast is in the can.
An iPod, a phone, an internet.